I am joined by Patty Turner. She's the Dean of the Science, Engineering, and Technology Department here at Howard Community College. And Mike Lawn, he's the Dean of the Mathematics Department at Howard Community College. And, you know, Patty, it was very appropriate that you say problem solving, because I think that for most of us, we think science, engineering, math, and it's like problems. Oh my gosh, you know, problems. And I was, you know, what's really interesting, I was good with math. I was good with sciences. I was always good with that. So I didn't quite have issues with it, but I still freaked out. I still freaked out every time that I heard that I had to take a science class, or that I heard that I had to take a math class. I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, I stopped breathing and I was like hyperventilating almost. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to do with this class? And I did well. And maybe that's a good place to start, you know, because I think a lot of people feel the same way that I do. So why is that? Why do we get so stressed about the sciences and about the math? And how can we change that? Because if we think about it, that's what we use every single day in our lives.
Well, I mean, you ask a really good question. I think the good news is, and you're significantly younger than I am, but I think the good news is that I don't think we're introducing young people to science the same way that we used to. And we're not, I think we're doing a much better job of letting, you know, helping them understand that this isn't just reserved for like smart people, you know. And I have a lot of students who, particularly in our research program, that said, you know, I just really thought only like geniuses could do this. But now I know that if I'm interested in it and I engage in it because I'm interested in it and I find things about it that are relevant to me, and I just work hard, I can do it. And the more I do it, the more I understand, and the more I understand, the more interested I am in it. And the more interested I am in it, the better I do. So I think we've changed our whole approach from very small kids, you know, now growing up. I think they're much more engaged in STEM, and I think they're much more interested in STEM and comfortable with it. Now, Mike, I can guess you could talk to the math piece, but, you know, math and STEM, you know, math and science are all integrated. But, you know, I see a lot of, well, Mike can talk to the, about this, but I see a lot of energy in the math department around reaching young children.
And that's a very important piece that you mentioned, Patty, and it's reaching students, young people, is specifically the target audience, to let them know exactly as you said, Patty, that any of the STEM disciplines are not reserved for people that are the so-called geniuses. It's for everyone. And sometimes I worry that we don't really give our young people, I mean, I'm going to play off what Patty was mentioning about the research, and that we don't typically give young people the opportunity to really immerse themselves in mathematics and science and allow them to explore. It's often they know they have to get to the correct answer, but actually, mathematics and science are these wonderful exploratory disciplines where, when we just, I call it the sandbox, when we allow people to and young people and our own students to play in our sandbox that is our discipline, they see it through a totally different lens. And when we can open that lens up to our students at the college, but young people, they see all of the STEM disciplines in a totally different light. So I think that's one way to help temper some of that anxiety that might be there.
You know, I really appreciate that. I really appreciate everything that you both said. I'm sorry, Patty, I didn't mean to cut you off. But I think it's important to acknowledge, you know, the two things that you guys said, you know, that really jumped to me. The one is, it's not for geniuses, right? Because that's the idea, is like, you have to be super, super, super smart. And we almost put those barriers ourselves. It's not that anybody told us that we're not smart enough, is that we feel that way, right? Like I told you guys at the beginning of our conversation, I always did well. I was always an A+ student in all of my classes, and math was not a difference. Yet every time I was in front of a math of a science class, I just felt like this pressure, you know, like I really felt uncomfortable. Even though I succeeded in all of my classes and I did really, really well. So there is this idea, there's this preconceived idea that we have. And maybe it's because of what you said, Mike, you know, that we when we're little, when we're kids, even though we're figuring out the world, we're not figuring out understanding that a lot of it is science. You know, when we play with the mud, you know, we're mixing the sand with the water. I love that example. We're making mud. Well, that's chemistry, right? Like a very simple chemistry type of thing that we're doing right there. So from the beginning, if we can see it that from the beginning, we're already exploring the sciences, maybe we can get more comfortable and we can actually realize that we're all our own geniuses and you know, we can go into the sciences confident that we have what it takes to do it. And go ahead, Patty, I'm sorry.
I was gonna say, I had another thought about it too. And I think it's important for children and even college students to see us as vulnerable. So this idea that all the experiments work all the time, that all the math teacher can solve the math problem immediately and perfectly. And that's just not true. So I think a lot of it is how we image ourselves as vulnerable people that make mistakes, and that there's value to making mistakes, and that it's certainly okay to make mistakes.
I want to, you know, it's interesting. And Patty, I'm sure you've had this statement come your way, as I have many times. Wow, this must just come easy to you, and you're brilliant with it. And my comment is, actually, no, math does not come easy to me. I have to work hard at it. I really like it. I think it's really cool, but it takes me a lot more time than it does other people to do it. But I'm willing to work hard to do it because I like it so much. And there's that misconception as well. And when you start asking people who work in the STEM disciplines, there's a lot of that. Really, really, to be successful, it's the hard work that pays off.
Right.
And it's that passion then that comes really, and that really drives you to continue to work hard at it. And that's, you know, that's the case with everything. I mean, no career is, it's easy. No career is, it's a given. It's, you know, the career that I'm at, definitely a lot of things can go wrong. It's not perfect. And it does not come easy, as you guys were saying. So thank you. Thank you for bringing that leveling, you know, to the math and the sciences, which, as I said, we all kind of see as this superior classes, superior type of options out there in education, when what we really need to look at is what is our passion and, you know, what drives us to that. Which brings me to my next question. How did you guys fall in love, you know, with the sciences? When did you find out? What was that moment that when you said, aha, this is what I want to do. This is really what is, you know, true to my heart and what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Mike, you want to take that or you want me to start?
You could start, Patty.
So I can actually track it to a specific course in high school. I was taking an advanced biology course and I realized that I was pretty good at it. And that I really loved learning about how things work in the world of biology, and in particular kind of related to medicine. So that's when I figured it out, and I was lucky because I was able to figure it out when I was relatively young. I had an amazing teacher who made biology seem exciting and kind of sexy and fun. So that helped. I think sometimes you're really influenced when you're young by somebody who is remarkable. And I would say that person was remarkable for me. So it was just a combination of all that. And then I just never looked back. And I was the first person in my family that ever considered a science as a major or something like math. They were all social workers and teachers and economists. No scientists in my family, at least in the modern times. So I was kind of a rebel, I guess. What about you, Mike?
Yeah. Patty, I'm the same way. It was a teacher that, and I can trace it directly to, was my one of my middle school math teachers. She actually, her name was Miss Miller. And I knew I wanted to be a teacher. I mean, in elementary school, I just knew. The question was, what did I want to teach? I thought about early on music. That almost happened, actually. But when I was in sixth grade with Miss Miller, sixth grade math, and thankfully she also taught me seventh grade pre-algebra. And I knew then that, yep, I was going to teach math the rest of my life, because She was really, truly an inspiration. I was able in my senior year of high school to do an internship program where I spent one day a week with her, and she let me teach the class. And that was a remarkable experience. And she wrote, you know, it was like we evaluate faculty now. She evaluated, and her comment was, "You almost mirror what I do." And my thought was, well, that's because I really liked what you did. But, and then in college, I had a professor that I at one point started to question whether I wanted to teach or not in high school. I mean, I ultimately went on to teach middle school briefly, but he said, maybe you need, you like the creative side of math. This was Dr. Lee May at Salisbury. And he said, maybe you want to think about going into higher ed. And so he really opened up the undergraduate research for me, which allowed me to really dive in and explore math, which when, you know, I think this the idea of undergraduate research is something Patty and I are both passionate about, but it was Lee May that lit that spark for me. And it's just been, it hasn't stopped since.
That's wonderful. So you mentioned, you know, you both mentioned early school teachers, but Mike, you mentioned, you know, later in your career teacher, like a college teacher. And I just want to, you know, kind of like think about HEC and our students when they come in. Most of them already have either a really great relationship with the sciences and math, or this love-hate relationship where I know that I need to pass you and I know that we need to have some sort of relationship, but I would much rather not even have you in my life, right? So when students come to HCC and they have to take these classes, you know, what's the philosophy, for teachers as they approach students in their maths, in their sciences, especially because those are one of the classes that you're not only seeing the students who are going into that career, but you're seeing pretty much everybody. Everybody has to take some sort of science, some sort of math as part of their school journey. So when you have the students in class, what's the goal of the teachers? What's the goal of everybody in those classes? Patty, let's start with.
Okay. So I think that what we really try to do is get to know our students and get to know them in terms of what their aspirations are and their hopes are and what they really want to get out of a class. I mean, we get a heterogeneous group of students, often not in the same class, but we have a lot of students who are non-majors, and we realize that when they take their 7 credits of required science courses, that might be the only exposure they have to science or technology or engineering. What we're really aiming to do with those students is to really get them to understand the nature of science and inquiry and to try to make it relevant to their lives so that they can be consumers of science, that they're interested in enough about it, and that they understand the importance of it in terms of their lives, that they're going to be future learners. They're going to keep reading about it, maybe a magazine article or a newspaper article or see a show, a Nova show or something, and understand it, right? And then feel excited about the fact that they can understand that more technical stuff. We see a lot of pre-allied health majors. They want to be healthcare professionals. Sometimes they think, I just have to get through these science courses so that I can like get into my clinical courses. So for us there, I mean, it's really important for us to kind of connect what they're learning in these prerequisite courses, their chemistry courses, their biology courses, to their careers, and then hopefully start developing their clinical reasoning as they go through those courses. It's a little bit easier when you have a committed major, right? So you have a biology major, an engineering major. It's a much different scenario. What you want to do with them is you want to make sure that you provide them with a solid foundation for moving on. You want to build their confidence, you know, because we talked a little bit before about, you know, maybe not feeling as confident or as capable as, you know, we want to make sure that, and we want to build some really strong foundational skills. So we're really lucky at HCC because our classes are smaller than they are at some big universities. So we can really get to know our students and we can do some things with them that maybe other people in other situations can't because of the sheer number of students. So for example, for us, in our second year science courses, we really teach them how to critically evaluate primary research articles. We walk them through the process We have them read and report out on data tables. I mean, that's something that a lot of students don't see until their junior, senior years of college or even graduate school. So we really try to teach them how to do that in a safe zone where, you know, there's no evaluation, there's no exam. We just want to give them the confidence to do that so that when they move on, they, you know, they're ready to go when they're juniors and seniors. Mike?
You know, Patty, you've almost hit every aspect. As I was listening to you, I was like, check, check, check.
Didn't talk ahead of time.
We didn't. I mean, this is typical Patty and Mike working together, actually, which is so much fun. And I think in mathematics, as Patty was talking about, you know, having the students reach a point where they could watch a NOVA episode and understand the science that's there. And the word that kept coming to my mind for mathematics, it would be the parallel to what Patty described, is we want to contextualize this for the students. Mm-hmm. Why is it that you're doing this mathematics that you are doing? How is it going to serve you when you ultimately wind up in your career? Can you pick up USA Today or another newspaper? I always mention USA Today because the cover typically has a graph of the front page, typically has a graph of some sort. And can a student pick it up, look at it, understand it, and maybe if there's something wrong with it, understand what is wrong with it and say, wait a minute, while that story is not being told the right way, or, you know, that's any newspaper, any research article they may run into, is that story that's being told in the chart or the graph or the data that's being discussed, is it accurate? Mathematics for many students, it is that drudge that they have to get past to get to the next level, to get to completion and whatnot. But when I think about it, the big thing, and I know the faculty in the science division do this as well, we have to bring our passion to the table and to the classroom, because that's what lights up the students, that they'll say, wow, there is something about this that I need to get involved with. And sometimes students that come into our classes, maybe not turned on to math and science, are because of the passion of the faculty members. In terms of our STEM students, it's the same as what Patty said. It's providing a solid foundation for them to stand on that's broad-based, but also allows them to easily transfer and move on to a four-year institution, or in some instances with some of our STEM students, it's actually joining the workforce immediately. Mm-hmm. Because yep. Some of our STEM students only need that associate's degree in order to start working at a very good salary, I have to say. And so I wouldn't say the largest chunk, but there's a significant number of students that, wow, you only need an associate's degree in STEM and you can command a very nice wage. Even in this area.
So let's actually talk about some of the areas of study and some of the courses that are offered, you know, through HCC. So let's start with you, Patty, since we have this nice pattern going where Patty goes first and Mike goes next.
So we have, let's see, we do teach a lot of courses to students, like I said, who are non-majors, who have no plans to major in a STEM field or work in a STEM field, and that's fine. We're happy to do that. We love those students. They bring joy to our lives, and we learn a lot from them. And also, like, you know, trying to connect our STEM discussions to maybe some of the things they want to go into, like journalism, perhaps, or, you know, economics. You know, there are multiple connections between STEM and other disciplines. But when it comes to classical STEM degrees, in my division, we have really basically, I would chunk it out into three categories. We have life sciences, and in life sciences, you have biology, environmental science, plant science. We do have a few preclinical programs like pre-pharmacy, which is a really highly enrolled program. We have physical sciences, and in physical sciences, you find astronomy. We've got a fabulous astronomy program, geology, oceanography, meteorology, chemistry, physics. And then ending up, we have engineering and technology. Engineering at HCC is one of the most highly enrolled programs on our campus. We have hundreds of students really interested in many different areas of engineering. And I'm proud to say that we have all the courses that they need to transfer as juniors to any engineering school. So we have aerospace, we have fire protection engineering, mechanical, civil, computer, electrical. And then we have this interesting little bucket of technology programs, which are really designed, as Mike said, to prepare students for immediate work. So we have a construction management program, high skill, high demand job, high wage. We have a biomedical engineering technology degree where students get jobs in healthcare facilities and they troubleshoot and repair and work on diagnostic equipment. We have an electronics technology program. We have a computer-aided design program, gaming and simulation. There's so many choices. I want to go back to school. I want to be like 13 again. And we also have an additive manufacturing technology program, which is the new kid on the block, but this is all about additive manufacturing and 3D printing. So there's a lot of energy around that right now. So Mike?
Patty has the bulk of the programs, I have to say, because in the mathematics division, we have math. We have one program, and it's a general mathematics program. Now, I will say the mathematics division supports a lot of other disciplines in general education. You know, everyone takes a math class, just like everyone takes a science class. So a lot of the work that we do supports our other disciplines on campus, and it also supports student learning for students that may need to brush up on their work. We have an extensive program to help students, you know, get to that point where they can be successful in their college level courses. But I have to say, one of the exciting statistic for me was that just a few years ago, we were graduating about 2 students a year in mathematics, and this year we graduated 10. So that was a huge jump for the mathematics program to see such a huge leap in the number of graduates. And given that commencement just happened, that was really exciting for me to share with all the faculty in the math division that we have gone from 2 to 10, and let's keep adding more. So, but what's interesting to note is many of those students were combining mathematics with another discipline, for example, physics or engineering, because they're so closely related that by adding on 1 or 2 additional courses on either side, in either of the disciplines, they can have 2 degrees. And so many students are really tuning into that idea now of being able to get more than 1 degree with just 1 or 2 additional courses. And maybe that helps toward a minor if they transfer. One of those disciplines becomes the minor, the other becomes the major. And it makes our students much more marketable when they do decide it's time to go in the job world.
You know, and I thank you for that, Mike. And I, you know, with Patty, as we're listening to her and all the programs that she's telling us about, it's clear, right? It's clear which path you're going to go, depending on which career you're looking at. I think when it comes to mathematics, it was not so clear, you know, what path can I take after I've taken, you know, and I got a degree in mathematics. So can you maybe help us paint that picture a little bit?
Sure. And that's one of those disciplines where you say math, what do I do with mathematics? I can teach it. And I highly recommend that. It's a wonderful profession. Love doing it. Don't want to leave it. But it's interesting to note what other employers are seeking out mathematicians. And it's a discipline that is continuing to grow. For example, computer science is a close cousin of mathematics, and understanding the problem solving that goes along with mathematics and the algorithm development is really what's critical in computer science. So many math majors are also computer science majors, and they will do a dual degree in both and find themselves working in computer science. But one of the largest employers of mathematicians in the United States is only miles from our campus, and that happens to be NSA. They're always looking for mathematicians to do cryptography and any type of mathematics associated with communications. The Applied Physics Laboratory hires mathematicians, but it's often another idea that we share with our students is to add in some business courses, because the business world, particularly finance and economics, those disciplines are looking for mathematicians. If you look at Indeed.com, you know, if you're just randomly looking to say who's hiring these days, you'll see an analyst. They're looking for analysts. Well, analysts, one of the typical first credentials they're looking for is a background in mathematics, because you know how to work with the numbers, you know how to work with the data. So, and we are living in a data-driven society, and so statisticians have become high demand. The pharmaceutical industry is constantly looking for statisticians to help them with their work. The federal government, obviously, constantly looking for statisticians. So while it seems like the doors aren't open, the math itself, if you have just a true love of math, you might find yourself in the academy, that the university or college. But if it's using that math to solve a problem in a closely related field, the possibilities are really endless.
Thank you for clarifying that, because yes, just like you started saying, what do I do with math? You know, yep. What can I do? But it really sounds like it can really just relate to many, many other fields and many other sciences. Now, Patty, one of the most exciting things that happened at HEC not too long ago was the opening of this beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous STEM building. And I really want you to talk about, you know, in depth, the building itself and some of that. And, you know, right now I think that one of the saddest things is that we cannot access the buildings at HEC and be able to experience it ourselves. But nonetheless, knowing that it's still there, and as we continue to move forward, we're reopening. Howard County just announced yesterday, this Friday morning, some of the restrictions are going to be lifted. I know that does not involve HEC in any way, but you know, it seems like more and more we're moving that way, right? So it's something to look forward to, something to look forward to the day that we can go back into a building. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of those things that are there in the STEM building.
So it's interesting that you talk about, you know, the reopening, because prior to this session, I just had a meeting with my engineering faculty. We were like working through the safe reentry plan, right? So we're really excited about that, because we really believe as a faculty that hands-on experiences and active learning are the most important things. And while we realize that there are a lot of digital tools that you can use to accomplish it, it's never going to really replicate the experience of actually doing the dissection, doing the experiment, using the tool to build something. So we really are anxious, like you said, to get back in. But when we built the building, I remember sitting there with the architects, and I told Mike this story, because we'll talk about his building in a minute. I was petrified. I was like, I'm going to be in charge of, you know, leading a team to build this building that's going to exist for 40 years. And I'm going to make sure I get a lot of input from everybody. And collectively as a faculty, we want this space to be joyful. We want people to know when they walk in the door, what kind of building and facility they enter. So we have science in the hallways, in the public spaces. Even the light fixtures look like benzene rings if you walk in. So, I mean, there is science around every corner in that building, done tastefully. So we really had some things in mind like that when we constructed the building. We built it for collaboration. So we wanted to provide multiple spaces for students and faculty to collaborate in hallways and in niches. So we have whiteboards everywhere. That was one thing my faculty said. If we could put whiteboards on the ceilings, we would want whiteboards everywhere, because we love to write notes to each other and solve problems together. All the classrooms in the building are fully flexible, so that the furniture is movable. We have collaboration monitors so students can work on projects together. Faculty can come in and students can come in and rearrange the furniture in any configuration they want. Every classroom has laptop computers, so they're all, you know, they're very high-tech rooms. The analytical equipment in the building is amazing. I have partners from four-year schools that walk through our building and they look at me and they say, how do you get this stuff? We have scanning electron microscopes, fluorescence microscopy, atomic absorption spectrophotometers, and we've got incredible tools that students can get their hands on in the first 2 years of their undergraduate experience, which is amazing. When we thought about the general feel for the building, what we wanted it to look like and feel like, we wanted it to be a warm, bright, welcoming space. We wanted, you know, even things like the color palette and the finishes that we picked out. There are windows everywhere, you know, so there's lots of light in the building. And we wanted, you know, so we picked some kind of like, we brought in the colors of the earth. So you'll see, you know, the sky blues and the grassy greens and the colors of rocks and, you know, things like that. So we just wanted to be warm and welcoming, a happy place. We wanted students to basically hang out there because they felt good there. And they actually do. I mean, they are there on Friday night at 10 o'clock. They're there on Sunday at 2. Collaborating in the open spaces and solving problems together and working on the collaboration monitors together to kind of work on problems together. So I would just say it's a joyful, high-tech, well-equipped space. We have a dedicated space for undergraduate research. So we can talk a little bit about the undergraduate research program, which has been wonderful. We have a rooftop observatory with a research grade telescope. We have a super high tech greenhouse that we use for the research program, but also for horticulture students. So yeah, it's been it's been a nice place to live for the past 3 years.
It sounds, and if you haven't been there, I mean, it really is just beautiful to watch, beautiful to see. I know we did Green Fest there two summers ago, I want to say, and it was it's just beautiful. The space itself really enhanced the event. So you're right, and I'm only talking about the aesthetics of it, you know, like, and as I was peeking through the doors and the windows of the building, just kind of like seeing in the classrooms, I mean, I saw machinery there in some of the rooms, and I was impressed to see all of that, because it's not something that I've seen in the school before, you know, right. It's definitely not something that I've seen in other schools in the area, and so I was really, really impressed to see that students have access to all of those tools for learning. So it's beautiful, and I, you know, once we reopen, I definitely invite, you know, those who are interested in the sciences to just come and explore the building. You know, if nothing else, if you don't want to have a conversation or anything like that, it's totally okay, but just come and explore the building, and I think that you'll be mesmerized and you'll be really impressed by everything that's in there. Mike, the math classes take in the place in the STEM building, or is there a separate building for math?
They do not. The math classes actually the true name of the building that you're talking about is SET. There is no M in it. And that's, there is no M. Patty and I joke about this all the time. It's one of our running, we always laugh about it together. So the math classes right now take place in the Hickory Ridge building. But I actually have on my desktop a set of blueprints that we are approving to move forward into the next phase of building the new math and athletics center. And once that is open, which we're scheduled to open in the fall of 2024, that will have a brand new state-of-the-art math and athletics center. So the math division will be housed in the, I always got to think about the orientation here, the north side of the building, within what is essentially going to be a tower. And it looks a little similar to the SET building with lots of glass and so forth. In a research lab for math. But the other half of the building will be a new performance gymnasium and an auxiliary gym and a brand new swimming pool and an amazing state-of-the-art athletic facility. And it's going to be literally where the current building is now. So that will get leveled, and very soon you will see the new building starting to rise in two phases. So once that happens, we will move out of the Hickory Ridge building, and we'll leave our penthouse there for a penthouse in the new building.
That sounds exciting. Exercising the body and the brain are going to come together into one building. I love that.
You got it.
I love
that.
You got it.
Actually, from the tutoring room, you can look across the hall and see the indoor track. So they're only feet apart. Only feet apart, according to the new blueprints, anyway. Yeah. Or the current blueprints.
Something to definitely look forward to.
Yeah.
Patty, you mentioned undergraduate program. You know, we haven't really talked about the honors program or, you know, internships or other opportunities for students. So I definitely want to open that up because it's not just what happens in the classroom. It's not just the classes that are offered. The experience goes farther than that. So I definitely want to start with that. So Patty, can you tell us a little more about some of those opportunities that ATC offers for students?
Sure. So, you know, we do work with our internship office, you know, to create and pursue internships for our students. But the one thing that I'd really like to talk about is what I think is really unique to Howard Community College. It's the only program of its kind in Maryland and even across the country. There are very few programs like this. We have a course-based program for undergraduate research. So we really believe it's important for students to figure out early if this is for them, if they like it, and to engage them early. We were finding that maybe 10, 15 years ago that students were transferring to four-year schools, and while they had the skills and abilities to really work in a research lab as a third or fourth year student, it was a little harder for them to compete. So we decided we are going to start a research program. So we have a series of 4-1 credit courses that students take sequentially over their 2 years with us. And as part of that course structure, they end up joining a research team with a faculty mentor, and they work on original research and they ask original questions. So, you know, I won't go into the details of each course, but it starts with basic, what is research, how to formulate a question, learning about IRBs and research ethics, and it ends with a poster and hopefully a paper and lots of presentations at the end of their time. I'm happy to say I have, say, 25 full-time faculty working for me. 12 of them have been research mentors. So there's a lot of energy in the faculty around doing this. We have projects in, I have one group of students that are looking at clock genes and feeding behavior and caterpillars. I have another bunch of students that are on the roof of the building looking for exoplanets. I have another bunch of students that are modeling chaos in double pendulums. So, you know, the projects range from physics to invertebrate biology to neuroscience to astronomy. So we have projects all over the map. And our students are doing great things. They're publishing, they are presenting all over the country. So I'm really proud of them. We've got a robust external advisory committee, which includes members from our four-year transfer institutions and also business and industry and government agencies. So our students are transferring and finding nice pathways to research, you know, after transfer, because we have these amazing connections. And I'm going to let Mike talk about this. I forgot the project on drone technology, which is really cool. I'm going to let Mike talk about how the research that we were doing and the research that the math students were doing led to our new journal. Do you want to talk about that, Mike?
Patty, it was funny because I was reaching over to my pad and I was going to write down those four letters and just hold it up and be like, Patty, don't forget. Yes, I'll take it. You could fill in for me here. So I guess, Patty, it was almost 3 years ago that it was that fall day in, it was in November, I think. It was November, and there was a group of math and science division faculty together in one of our faculty professional learning communities. And our theme that year was really diving into research and our personal research, but also how do we share our love of research with the students. And we realized in that one afternoon conversation that our students, that they're really the culmination of the research experience, which, as Patty pointed out, is at the end of, it's in the fourth course in the URSC sequence, is the public presentation. And that can take on two different looks. One of those is, you know, actually standing with a poster or doing a talk at a conference. But the other, which is kind of in the mind of anyone in academia, The creme de la creme is getting published and getting something in print. And that afternoon, we decided, wow, we don't have a student research journal. Let's make one. And so that was in November. And let's see, that would have been November, I guess, of 2017, because by May of 2018, we had produced our first journal of research in progress for our students to publish. That first one was, we were, as a group of faculty that were putting it together, we really were, each meeting was, well, we're walking down a path that none of us have any idea what we're really doing here, but we're going to figure this out. And we did. And we came up with an amazing product. We asked in that first edition, we asked some of our alums to come back and write paper or finish up work that they had been doing. And they did. And we had an amazing release and release party. And the second year, it just got better, and we had students from more disciplines participating. We had faculty from more disciplines participating, and not just STEM, which is what made it even more awesome. And, you know, we just released the third edition. That was 2 weeks ago now. And the third one just takes the work to yet another level. And so we're so proud of that research journal. And you know, people say to us, are you as faculty proud? We're proud for the students, because the student work that's in there is absolutely phenomenal. And again, these students aren't necessarily the geniuses. They're students that just want to get in and learn the research process. In our mind, they are geniuses. They are, because they're willing to do this. But you don't have to be a straight A student in order to do well in research. And I think that's an important message for students to understand, is that sometimes it's this research process that finally engages students in a way that they've never been engaged before. And I think that's part of why Patty and I value it so much, is because it's a different way to reach our students.
And I also want to point out that the articles in the journal are peer reviewed. So yeah, that's important. And last year we did something really interesting. We reached out to the art students, and the art students met with the research teams and developed original art for the journal that relate to each of the papers. So you know, you talk about STEAM, right? Wow. But I think either Mike or I, if anybody's listening to this and they want to see what the journal looks like, if they contact us, we'd be happy to send them a link to the digital journal.
And right now, if you go to the college's homepage,
it's there.
It's there. There's a link to it. It's in Pressbooks, the digital version, but you can actually access it right now. It's one of the stories about our students across the bottom of the main homepage for the college.
Wonderful. So, you know, I think we've talked about the sciences, we've talked about how important they are, we've talked about, you know, the opportunities at HCC. I think it's important to talk about these upcoming semesters, right? The summer semester, the fall semester, as we continue to explore this COVID-19 reality and whatever it's going to continue to bring us, right? And we continue to just move forward with it as it comes and as it presents itself. What are your thoughts? So what are you know, how are you guys seeing moving forward in the summer? Are you guys offering all of the classes, some of the classes, and looking into the fall, you know, what are some of the things that you guys are adjusting and adapting for our students?
Patty, I'll jump in on that if you want first.
Sure.
It was very interesting in the middle of the semester when we literally threw a switch within a 2-week period and moved our mathematics classes to a virtual environment. And we're doing the same thing this summer. Every single math class that we have offered in the past in the summer, which is nearly every class that we offer in the fall and the spring, we're going to offer, we flipped it. We're not using an asynchronous model, meaning we're not posting videos and saying, you know, go do this at your leisure. We do have a few sections like that, but the math faculty talked about this we probably had a 3-hour meeting, almost a 3-hour huddle. to decide what are we going to do. And we've adopted a synchronous model, which is literally where we're meeting the students for a block of time, and it's the assigned time that a student would see in the course schedule. And we're teaching using Zoom. The whiteboard in Zoom becomes our whiteboard we would have used in the classroom. We may have additional notes that we use, and we push the notes to the students. Yeah, we are including additional videos and resources in the course shells to help support the students more, but we're actually there meeting the students and interacting, and they're able to ask questions, and they can see us solving the problems, or we're having them solve problems. So in many ways, we've tried to simulate the classroom experience, even though we're not physically in the classroom. And that's what we're doing this summer. And if need be, we will do it in the fall as well. And, I found an interesting remark from one of the local, it was not Kate Hetherington, although I could certainly see Kate recognizing this importance with the synchronous learning, but it was another local community college president who had mentioned that the students at her college liked the synchronous learning because it provided normalcy, it provided structure, and it allowed the interaction with the faculty member and tutors as well. So again, as a little offshoot, all of our tutoring is now virtual as well through Zoom, but we're trying to simulate the closest experience we can, but doing it virtually.
So I would say that we're doing many of the same things that Mike mentioned. So our situation is a little different because we have the added component of those hands-on laboratories where, you know, it's unsafe to do these things in your house or impossible to do these things in your house. So we spent about a good 2 weeks trying to figure out how to pivot around that right before the college closed. A lot of the faculty and lab managers went in and actually filmed experiments and recorded them to post on their Canvas sites so the students could actually see the experiment being performed. We're doing kind of a combination of synchronous and asynchronous things. Lots of meetings with students, recorded lectures, but also scheduled meetings with students in small or large groups. And we had a meeting yesterday. We were talking about, you know, the good and the bad, you know, from our experience so far. And the faculty were saying that one of the things that the students were saying is that they felt like they were getting to know their teachers better in this online environment than they had before, simply because they could have these small meetings with them anytime, right? We're really, really trying to refocus our efforts now that we've gotten through the spring semester, and I think we've done a really good job to look at how we can find more ways for students to do more collaboration with each other, because they really enjoy that and they benefit from that. But this summer we will be online totally. We're offering pretty much our full array of courses that we had planned to offer if we were face-to-face, with the exception of organic chemistry, which we haven't really done enough work on yet to move it online. And in the fall, we're just gonna have to see what happens. But I have to say that we're ready for anything. We are working on some plans to maybe slowly bring students back safely to campus to do some hands-on activity, but we're really not sure what that's going to look like or if that's going to be able to happen. But we basically want to analyze what happened this spring, which, like I said, I think it went really, really well, and just make it better. And I think we've all learned a lot. I think everybody's learned a lot of things from this experience that are going to help us, whether we're teaching face-to-face in the future or teaching online or some combination. I think we're all going to be better teachers because of this. And I think the students are going to be better students too.
You know, I love what you said, Patty, that it's allowing, you know, the smaller environments, and the fact that it's online is allowing the students and the teachers to get to know better each other. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I personally appreciated about HEC being an HEC student was the small groups, right? I felt like I was always in touch with my teachers. I felt like my teachers really got to understand me. I had children at the time, so if I had an emergency, if I needed, you know, to skip class for whatever reason, I felt like I could talk to my teachers and that they would understand that they would work with me. Whereas when I went to my four-year school later and I found myself in these huge classrooms with hundreds of kids, I was like, oh my gosh, this would have not worked for me if I had gone this route from the beginning, because I don't think I would have been able to create a relationship with my teacher where he would have been able to understand, you know, me and support me. You know, also I was an immigrant. I was from Ecuador. And coming in and trying to dive into the system and understand it, and English, and learning to put periods instead of commas, you know, when I was writing 1,000 or things like that, so that they would get the answer that I was getting. That would have never happened in such a huge environment. So, you know, community colleges really are a great value. I can definitely speak from experience. It's a great opportunity, and now that it's online, I really like that it's bringing that relationship even closer for the students and the teachers. I think that's one of the things that I treasure the most about my experience at HEC as a student. So we are getting ready to wrap our conversation up. I know that we could still continue our conversation and you know, talk a lot longer about the STEM faculties and everything that you guys are doing, but for students, for parents, for people who are interested in finding more information, how can they get in touch with you guys? How can they connect now that the buildings are closed? What's the best way to reach out and find information?
So probably the best way to contact me is simply through my email. I'm a compulsive email checker. So it's pturner, T-U-R-N-E-R, @howardcc.edu. But you can also find me in the directory at the top of the webpage, you know, on our homepage. There's a directory, so you can find me there too. I'm happy to chat with anybody about anything related to STEM at HCC.
Yeah, I agree with Patty. The easiest way to find us, you've probably heard the binging in the background of the emails coming in. I think I said before we signed on that if we had the email open, that there would be a bing every 30 seconds with the email either coming to Patty or coming to me or both of us, if it happened to be on a distribution list that we're both on. But the email is certainly the easiest way to reach. And I'm a very easy email, MLONG@howardcc.edu. And, you know, I'd be happy to Zoom with anyone. And that way we can still communicate and certainly make things happen in that way.
I really appreciate you guys making yourselves available, because like I said, I think one of the reasons why many of us don't go into the sciences is because of that preconceived idea that we are not smart enough, we're not good enough, this is not for me, and that stress that we feel around the sciences. So to have the opportunity to have these conversations with somebody who's in the field and who's going to help you put that at ease a little bit and just understand that if this is really your passion, and do it and get that idea exactly where you want to go with it, and that yes, you can do it. If this is what's truly in your heart, you will do it. And if this is just one of those required classes, as you were saying, that you're just trying to get through so that you can move with your career, then you know what, make the best out of it and see how you can relate it, see how you can incorporate it, see that how you can make it valuable for the rest of your life, more than just those few hours in your semester. Is there anything else that you guys would like to share before we close our conversation today?
Well, I would just like to say that we love our students. I'm really happy to be working so long in an institution where the college values its students so highly and is committed to supporting not only the students, but the faculty in their efforts to engage in really bona fide, high quality learning experiences. I think that, I'm kind of closing out my career now, you know. It's no secret around the campus that I'm retiring in about a year, or about 8 months. But I just feel so lucky to have worked there and to have met so many fine students and colleagues. So it truly is a remarkable place.
Yeah, HCC is a place that's about the people. I knew that within the first couple weeks that I ever started working at the college. It's the staff, it's the faculty, it's the students. And that's what keeps you coming back every day. It doesn't feel like going to work. It's like going to be with your family. And I know you hear that term a lot. You're now part of the HCC family. And That's real. There is, that is a reality. There is an HCC family. And so I value the college so much. I miss the students right now. I miss the interaction. I know someday that will happen again. In the meantime, we can watch each other on Zoom and wave at each other on Zoom and so forth. So I've often joked that when I was a child, I watched the Flintstones and the Jetsons, and so much of what we saw in the Jetsons, particularly the Visiphone, we laughed at, oh, that will never happen. And well, you know, I think the Visiphone is happening right now. So many of those gadgets that, you know, the cartoonists created and we laughed at, they're reality now. They're a reality.
So I just thought of something that I thought might be a good way to kind of end the session. And I was just reminded of a student of mine who actually came from some pretty bad circumstances, but she was really, really a good student. And she ended up interviewing at a number of medical schools. And, you know, sometimes our medical schools are a little elitist, right? And they are looking for people that went to, you know, Harvard and Yale. And it became apparent in the interview that she had started out at Howard Community College. So she actually emailed me this whole story. And she said she was at one medical school, which will not be named. And the interviewer looked at her and he said, oh, I see that you did your first 2 years at Howard Community College. Did you ever look back on that and think that maybe that was a mistake? And she looked him in the eye and she said, oh no, quite the opposite. That was the best decision I have ever made. And I thought, you know, that sums it up for me, you know, that sums it up.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a HCC graduate, I can also say the same. I mean, starting my education here in this country at Harvard Community College was definitely a great decision. It made me, not just the quality of education that I was getting, not just, you know, the great education, but also the understanding, also the support that I was receiving, also the fact that I was being seen as a person, you know, not just as a number, not just as another seat, you know, that we needed to fill, but actually as somebody who had a life, who was a wife, who was already a mom, who was an immigrant, who had issues with English, and, you know, who was putting commas where she should have put periods and things like that. And that really just gave me the confidence to keep growing in my career. Definitely the knowledge. I mean, I've said it before in other conversations. Some of the classes that I took at HCC when I tried to transfer them, they told me they had to transfer them as electives because they were, otherwise they would have to put them at the 400 level and they couldn't do that. So, you know, I mean, it's receiving here at HCC, affordable, you know, affordable, and yep, that people community, that people-centered, person-centered idea, it's throughout the entire school. It's something that you find in every class that I found as a teacher, that I found as an employee. It's something that I continue to value, and it's the reason why I continue to be here, part of HCC as an employee and Dragon Digital Radio. So thank you both so much for your time, and thank you both so much for speaking with me this morning. I really, really appreciate it.
It was great talking to you,
too.
Thank you very much.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.